Chapter 13. The Conspiracy. In the first year after they came to Plymouth, word was brought that the Indians were plotting against them. Squanto and another friendly Indian called Hobomok went out to find the truth. Presently, Hobomok ran in with the news that Squanto had been captured. "I saw them in the wigwam of the chief," he said. "He was sharpening his knife to kill him. He said that Squanto was your tongue, and that if he were dead, you would no longer be able to speak. I broke away from them and escaped, and as I ran, I looked back and saw the chief holding a knife at Squanto's heart." "We must go at once," said Captain Standish. "It will never do to allow the Indians to think we are afraid." "But," said Mr. Allerton, "they are many, and we are few." "For that very reason," said Standish, "we must go promptly and must show all our courage. If they think us afraid, they will kill us with ease. I must have 10 men, and we must start at once." They marched rapidly and surrounded the town. When the savages discovered them, they rushed around in great confusion and fear. The chief was not there, but Squanto they found in a wigwam, quite safe. So, firing a couple of volleys to frighten the inhabitants, they returned to Plymouth. In the second year at Plymouth, a rattlesnake skin, stuffed with arrows, was brought into the town and left by an Indian. They were much at a loss to know what it meant. "Squanto," said Mr. Bradford, "what can this mean?" "It means war," said Squanto. "He challenges you to fight him. He is a great chief. His people are the Narragansetts, and they live far from here, but they are very many as the sands on the shore," and he pointed to the beach, "or the leaves on the trees," and he pointed to the forest. "Nevertheless," said Captain Standish, "we must not show fear, however many they may be. Our only chance is to let them think we are not afraid, and they will then not attack us." So Mr. Bradford stuffed the snake skin with powder and bullets, tied it up firmly, and sent it off by messengers to the chief of the Narragansetts. The Indians were very much frightened at it, and thought it was some great magic. They passed it from hand to hand. The chief was afraid to keep it, and after some little time it came back to Plymouth again. Captain Standish had been right. The Indians would not attack them so long as they saw they were not afraid. But the Pilgrims thought it best to erect a barricade around the village. On the west, Fort Hill protected them with its cannon. On the south was the town brook. On the east was the ocean, so that there was only the north to protect. They dug deep holes all along the northern side of the town and filled them with posts, so as to make a palisade for about a half a mile from the ocean to Fort Hill. In it they made 4 bastions, or bay windows, which stuck out beyond the line of the palisade, so that they should be able to shoot the Indians if they should creep up and try to set fire to it. Captain Standish arranged the men in 4 companies, each with an officer. He taught them how to drill and how to shoot. 1 squad was drilled as a fire battalion to put out fire from the fire arrows, which they thought the Indians might shoot. Having built the palisade, they finished the fort, which they had begun the year before. This they built of heavy logs on the hill above the town, and in it they put the cannon and the powder. Meanwhile, they had had some little trouble with Squanto. He had become aware of his power and importance, and had attempted to frighten the other Indians and make them give him presents. He told them that the Pilgrims kept the plague buried in the storehouse, and that, if he wished, he could get them to let it loose. If the Indians did not make him presents, he would have them eaten up, he said. Despite this, which was not true, and which made trouble with some of the Indians, the Pilgrims were very sorry when Squanto died in 1622 of some disease which they did not understand. Early in the winter of their third year, Captain Standish found the Indians becoming more and more bold. He had gone alone on an expedition to certain Indians whom he believed dangerous, and you will now see how courageous a man he was. At this chief's village, the captain was seated around the fire with various Indians. One of them began to boast of the number of English and French he had slain. They were weak men, he said, and died crying, making sour faces like children. Here, said he to the chief, is a dagger which has drunk much blood. Do you see it? Said he to Standish. Look at it, for it looks at you. It is thirsty now, and will presently wish to drink. Standish understood quite clearly that the Indian expected to kill him that night, but was not at all afraid when the Indian came and lay down near him. He got up and began to walk back and forth in front of the fire. "Why do you not sleep?" asked the chief. "I do not know," said Standish, although he knew very well that if he lay down to sleep the chief would kill him. He himself did not wish to fight with the chief, for fear he should stir the Indians to revolt and cause an attack upon Plymouth. So all night he walked back and forth in front of the fire. The Indian, at times sitting and at times lying, always watched him, and every moment was ready to stick the dagger into him if the captain should be forgetful for an instant. The next day Standish left and came back safely to Plymouth. And now came news that Massasoit was very ill. Mr. Winslow, with another gentleman, started at once to see what could be done to help him. As they marched along, Indians came and told them that Massasoit was already dead. But when they reached his village, he was still alive. There in the middle of the town, from a large hut, came a tremendous beating of drums and the shouting and yelling of Indians. When the pilgrims got to the house, it was so crowded that they did not at first get in at all. In the middle, on the couch, was Massasoit, very sick. Some 6 or 8 women were rubbing him hard. Around him stood the medicine men, beating drums and shouting at the top of their lungs to drive away the wicked spirit who was giving him the disease. Winslow managed to get rid of the medicine men and the Indians and to get the poor sufferer a little air and a little quiet. Then he gave him a simple but powerful medicine which he had brought. Massasoit's mouth and tongue were so swollen with the disease that he had not been able to swallow anything for some days. They were all very much surprised, therefore, when Mr. Winslow succeeded in getting some medicine down his throat. He began to get better at once, and soon was quite well. He and all the Indians were convinced that the pilgrims were all very great men indeed, especially Mr. Winslow. Ever after, he was a true friend of theirs. He showed it at once by revealing to them a great conspiracy against them by other Indians, in particular by those chiefs who had tried to murder Standish. The plan was to kill all the English then in Massachusetts, and thus rid the land of them and return it to the Indians. One of the chief causes of it was not the wrongs done to the Indians by the pilgrims, for they had always acted very well toward them, but things done by another colony of Englishmen a little way up the coast. These had at first been bold, had beaten the Indians, taken their clothes away from them, and forced them to work hard, so the Indians had come to hate them. Then, as the winter had passed, the food of these Englishmen had given out. They had become afraid of the Indians, who had come to know that. It was now the Indians' turn to abuse them. They would come to the village at mealtime and take the food right out of the mouths of the Englishmen. When the latter were asleep, the Indians would snatch the blankets off of them and would wrap themselves in them. They beat them with sticks and held knives at their breasts, and the English were so frightened that they did not know what to do. On these the Indians planned first to take revenge and then come to Plymouth and kill the pilgrims. With this news, Mr. Winslow returned to Plymouth. Captain Standish and Mr. Bradford saw at once how serious this news was and how important it was that this conspiracy should be put down. There were many hundred Indians and only a very few white men. If the Indians once came to know their strength, they would have certainly little difficulty in killing all the white men. But it is a dangerous thing, said Mr. Bradford, to try to rescue the colony at Weymouth, which the Indians mean first to attack. They are but a few there, and cowards. They will not fight. If we go to rescue them, we shall have to send men from here. If the Indians then attack us at Plymouth, we shall have none to resist them." "Leave it to me," said Standish. "They are many, that is true, but they too are cowards, and if we are but bold and skillful, they will run from us. 8 men will be sufficient for me. More will arouse their suspicions and will also weaken our force here, so that you will not be able to defend the town. You will realize how brave a man Captain Standish was to attempt such an expedition with so few men." They started out in a boat, 9 all told, and rowed around to the settlement of Weymouth, which was some little distance up the coast. They found it entirely unguarded, and if they had not come, everyone in it might have been killed. The Indians, too, learned of the arrival of Standish, and, seeing probably what it meant, came over to the town to find out what could be done. One of them, a chief named Pexuit, a very tall, strong, and bold savage, told Habermock, the pilgrim's friend who had come with Standish, "I see the captain has come to kill us all. Tell him that we know it, but we are not afraid of him. Neither will we run away. Let him begin then when he dares. We shall be ready for him." The next day Pexuit came back, bringing other Indians with him. They squatted down on the ground before Captain Standish and began all of them to sharpen their knives. One of them said, "How fine a knife is this! See how sharp it is! At home I have another and a better. With that I have killed both French and English." And Pexuit then stood up and said to Standish, "You are a great captain, but you are a little man. I am not a chief, but I am a man of great strength and courage." Standish, who knew well what he meant, kept his temper and waited. The next day he induced Pexuit and the other chief, with some other Indians, to go into a hut together. He then went in himself with 2 or 3 of his own men. He shut the door tight and locked it, and then threw himself upon Pexuit. The Indian drew his knife and leaped to meet him. Standish was too quick for him, caught his wrist, twisted his knife from his hand, and after a desperate struggle, killed him with it. The other Indians were killed by Standish's men. Hobomok, who had remained outside the hut, came in when it was all over, and said to Standish, "Yesterday Pexuit bragged of his own strength and size. He said you were a great captain, but you were a little man. Today I see you are big enough to lay him on the ground." With the death of the leaders ended the conspiracy. Some few Indians appeared the next day marching in file, but when Standish and his men shot at them, they ran away. The others came in and promised to be peaceable and obedient.